Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Well, today I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Harpham and Graham Burt of XP Factory. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Delighted to have you both here. And I wanted to take a step back a little bit. I know you've got your numbers out recently and things, but I wanted to go back a few years, sort of back to 2018, 19, when you first started. What was your initial vision for Escape Hut?
Well, we'd seen the emergence of this really niche industry. We'd seen a small number of independent escape rooms popping up, and typically the things they had in common were that they were quite out of town, they were generally speaking quite underinvested, but they were run by highly passionate individuals and were really attractive to the typically gamers that were playing them at the time. And it was fascinating because for all these were not typical kind of hospitality and leisure venues, you know, way out of town, they're awkward to get to. As I say, I'm typically underinvested. The customer resonance was already amazing, so that was really interesting to us. So I guess the exam question became quite straightforward. If you were fortunate enough to be able to capitalise these things properly and put proper investment behind some highly thematic, almost cinema-esque rooms, or sort of immersive theatre type rooms, and if you could bring the sites to the fore, if you could put them in the most prime shopping centres in and around the country, then actually, could you turn this thing into an industry that is currently a little bit niche and appealing to gamers and make it a mainstream leisure play? And I suppose over the sort of 6 years that have come since, that's what we've been trying to do.
Okay, so how did that then lead to the acquisition for Boombox?
Well, so Escape Hunt, we had in and of itself all the way through until the very, very back end of 2021. Mm-hmm. And we've been growing that business. And by that stage, actually, it had got to a fairly decent critical mass. In fact, it was just about scaled enough to be breaking even in and of itself. And so we, if I'm honest, been quite lucky to get to that stage, given the 2 years that had preceded, given the COVID period where, you know, all bets were kind of off for hospitality businesses like ours. It was especially really small ones that were subscale. It was really, really hard. And so just surviving was a challenge. But we managed not only to survive, but with the support of some fantastic shareholders, we were able to raise enough capital actually to be able to grow quite substantially. So at the point when we came out of COVID, we had in Escape Hunt this business, which was now pretty consistent, very well performing in terms of its box economics and its metrics. And it gave us the confidence that we could do something else with the team that we built and with the capacity that we felt they had. So Boom came around for a couple of reasons. One, we needed to find a business that had a degree of commonality with what we already did. You know, we're good at game. We're showing that demonstrably through the customer scores in Escape Hunt. So it's got to be kind of game related. There's got to be something there at the margin. But also you want to be able to broaden your own net as well. So we weren't really doing anything wet with Escape Hunt. It's typically game-only revenues, tiny amounts of drink at the margin. So doubling down a little bit harder on a wet operation felt like a really, really good thing to do. So conceptually, this felt like a very sensible place to be in. Customers are excited by competitive socialising. It's high energy, which is great. There's a degree of commonality between what we've already got and what we're hoping to do. And that's great for the teams that we have and the skills that we've hopefully developed internally. And when you combine that with the tactical opportunity that we're seeing these large format spaces now at maybe half to two thirds the price that they'd been on a sort of a rolling 5 year previously, it felt that the time was now to get involved, make a big bold step, and so Boom was born, so to speak. And so we acquired, as you know, this incredibly nascent business in Boom. I think at the time when we first got talking about it, only had one trading site. But the work that the founders had done creating this really fantastic property pipeline that came with it somewhere around £12 million of capital contribution was enough to accelerate us by, we thought at the time, 3 to 4 years, i.e. we thought it would have taken us 3 to 4 years to build up a pipeline of sites like that if we'd been able to do it at all. And I say that because Escape Hunt is small format, 3,000 square feet. These are 10,000, 12,000 square feet sites. That's a different landlord. It's a different proposition. And we had no trading history. So it would have been a longer play for us to get there. So with all that is given, bringing it in made so much sense. We were able to use 2022 as that year to grow exponentially. We opened across both businesses 25 sites in that year. Mm-hmm. And then what you've seen through the numbers that we've already discussed is really the manifestation of that growth, you know, in the sort of high-level accelerated economics that you've seen.
Going back to 2019, turnover just under 5 million.
Yeah.
Now coming forward, your recent numbers are, well, 15 mm-hmm. months to March 2024, 60 million. Phenomenal growth, guys. How did you get around that?
Do you want to say that? Yeah, well, you know, obviously, Richard has spoken about the sort of move forwards. First of all, during COVID, within Escape Hunt, we raised some money. We expanded the estate from, it was effectively 8 sites at the end of, at the beginning of COVID. Through COVID, we expanded that to 15. We took on a couple of the franchise sites in Europe. So we bought back our master franchise in Paris. That gave us a site in Paris and also in Brussels. We did the same in Dubai. So we expanded the network and we got to a position where effectively we doubled the size of Escape Hunt over that period. Got more critical mass, and actually that business on its own was just about break even. It could have managed at that level. Obviously, bringing Boom on, it's a bigger format opportunity. These are typically 10,000 square foot sites. They're much higher turnover from that perspective. But really, the growth came from filling in that pipeline of properties that we acquired. So going from that first one site that was owner-operated with a few franchise sites up to what we have today, where we've got 23 owner-operated sites in Boom and 7 franchise sites, 30 in total. And similarly, we've expanded the Escape Hunt site. So that growth from sort of 4.9 million back in 2019, which was really from 8 sites in Escape Hunt, the tremendous growth has come from, first of all, the expansion of the estate, secondly, adding on Boom on top of that. But actually, within that, we've had tremendous like-for-like growth. So if you go back, Escape Hunt, as Richard said, when this was started back in 2017, 2018, was very much a niche business. It was very much in out-of-town type places. It was quite cliquey, I think possibly is the right word. Niche, I think is probably a better word for that rather than cliquey. That's become much more mainstream. And today, if you compare the unprompted awareness back then was about 5% of who knew what an escape game was. I think today it's much, much broader. So families will typically see an escape room as an opportunity to do something as a family on a half-term break, for example, that sort of thing. So we've come into the mainstream, we've benefited from that move into experiential leisure, we've benefited from escape rooms becoming more mainstream. And then associated with that, you've seen the move into experiential competitive socializing in bars. Boom has been right at the forefront of that. We've expanded that out. So we've had very, very strong like-for-like performances within the estate as that's matured through. So obviously, you know, it's been a very exciting journey.
So interesting question though. Your growth has been phenomenal, but does that align with your initial vision? I mean, you know, if I compare 2019, what you thought was going to happen, to what has actually happened, how would those two align?
Yeah, well, and I think on the very fortunate position that actually they align somewhat better, the reality, to the, than the vision, certainly at a box economics level. So, you know, the ultimate aim at the time was to have Escape Hunt rooms, Escape Hunt branches, which could do £500,000 of sales in a year at 30% EBITDA. So £150,000. And what you're seeing in last year's numbers is an average of circa £650,000 at 42%. So quite dramatic box economics. Now, I would say, you know, that's very much the positive. So I think, you know, ending up in the position where we are with these mature box economics is way outside scope that we could possibly have imagined. What I would say, you know, that sits against that is it was harder than we thought it was going to be. It took us longer than we thought it was going to take. And initially it was more expensive than we thought it would be as well. So, we obviously had those learnings through 2018, particularly. Fortunately now being out on the back end, as I say, you've got box economics that are better than we hoped for and the build costs which are lower than we'd imagined. So that feels like a good place to end up.
Yeah.
But the journey was tough.
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting point in there actually, Richard, because you said it cost more to do what you set out to do at that point. And there's a fascinating, if you look back at what we've achieved, particularly in the last 15 months, we're getting a fantastic return on capital. So even within the Escape Hunt network, our return on capital employed is 48%, so nearly 50% return on capital. That is way, way higher than what we had expected. We were expecting 30% EBITDA margin on a site which cost close to maybe $750,000 to build. So you're making 150 grand over a £750,000 build. What we're doing now is an average site is doing more like £250,000 EBITDA on a build cost of $500,000. So that return dynamic has moved very much in favor of the business. So with all the hard work, the sort of setting up of the business, the steps you have to go through to establish suppliers, to establish relationships with landlords to get the right thing, and also to build the IP, all of the games and things, that investment has been made, and you now have a platform that can really leverage that and deliver very, very strong returns. It's been a very, very good journey for Escape Hunt. Obviously, Boom is slightly earlier on in its journey, but even so, with the landlord deals that we're getting, where typically you're getting £300,000, £400,000, even £500,000 landlord contribution, your net investment in a site, rather than being £1 million, is closer to £600,000. And those sort of sites are typically delivering £200,000, £300,000, £400,000 of EBITDA. So again, the return on capital that we're getting, a cash on cash return, is around 50%. So the business is very, very well poised to grow, given those dynamics, I believe.
It's interesting you say that, because I noticed in your numbers you've got EBITDA still very strong, but there's still a loss after tax. I mean, is the business in a position to, you know, keep growing?
Yes. So I think there are a couple of points there, and I think Graham can probably elaborate them with more elegance than I can. But there are two key things that we consider. One is the free cash generated, and Graham can sort of bridge you from the EBITDA of 6.3 via the kind of negative working capital to the genuine free cash that we throw off, and therefore what you could do with organic expansion. So that's number one. And then two, obviously, is the rate at which you're returning on your capital. So given that you're throwing off free cash and therefore you have capital to expend, the fact that you can return it at 50% is a very, very good thing as you consider your growth and your future expansion. But do you want to bridge the cash flow?
Yeah, I think unfortunately, and I shouldn't really speak ill of my profession and the accounting, but I think unfortunately, you know, the accounting standards in some ways, I think, are moving further and further away from cash.
Yeah.
You know, and you get more into almost notional charges that have to go through the P&L, because now you've got, for example, an IFRS 16, you have to capitalize your leases, you don't show them as a rent payment, you have them a combination of capital repayment and interest. You get penalized as a young company because we have to use a very high interest rate. So a similar company that is bigger than ours, doing exactly the same and exactly the same lease, will have a lower P&L charge than we will, because we have to use a higher interest rate. We have all of our leases at the front end of their term, and therefore you have a full balance on your balance sheet, you have a high interest charge, again, you have a bigger charge going through your P&L for an identical lease that someone who was 5 years onto the journey would have. So there's lots of smoke and mirrors around that, and you have to really understand the technicalities. Fundamentally, what's important is, do we make money?
Mm.
And actually, if you step back and look at what the business is doing, we reported 6.3 million of old-fashioned EBITDA. That's actually after the rent payment rather than before the rent payment. 10 million before the rent payment. I could run around and tell everyone we made £10 million of EBITDA.
Mm.
That's not how we work.
Yeah.
6.3 million is after the rent payment. And actually, if you look at the cash flow statement, we delivered, it'll show you 11 million of operating cash flow, but again, that's before your rent payments. The rent payments appear lower down in the cash flow. There was 3.1 million of rent payments. So we made £8 million of operating cash. And the only question then is, what's your maintenance capex? Because if you're spending maintenance capex, that's the sustainable rate to keep the business going. Well, in the 15 months, we spent just over £1 million in true maintenance capex. The rest of the capex, 8.3 in total, including the 1.1, the rest of that was expansionary, where we built new sites and we added capacity to existing sites, which is driving further revenue growth. So if you come back to that question of what is your maintenance capex bill going forward, I'm estimating around about 3% of sales, which would be an industry sort of norm, which would be your maintenance capex bill on 60 million of sales. That's about 1.8 million. Let's just call it 2 million at the current rate. If we didn't grow the business, we made 8 million of operating cash. You would have spent 2 million pound on maintenance capex. We don't actually pay any tax at the moment because we've got a big tax loss. Mm-hmm. But even if you paid 20% tax and you took that over 25% tax, you would still be generating a thick end of 5 million pound of free cash flow. And on a market cap of just north of 20 million pounds, that's an incredible cash flow return. So that's how we look at it. And I say, fundamentally, the cash, the business is profitable. It's making money.
Yeah.
Irrespective of, unfortunately, what the P&L says. The other question, of course, is these standards are just an interesting anecdote. You've obviously got international financial reporting standards and you've got UK GAAP. Had we reported under UK GAAP, we would have shown £1 million after-tax profit. Under international reporting standards, we show £500,000 loss. So again, it's just illustrating that you have these different standards. Look at the cash generation. That's really the important thing.
So cash is king. That's what cash
we're saying. We think so.
Should absolutely. Yeah. So going back to the brands, I'm fascinated by this. So we've got Escape Hut, we've got Boom Bars. Now, how are they performing? What was your initial? And do you see them still performing? Are they still on an upward trajectory, or, you know, what's going on with them?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you know, we've obviously spent some time talking about the numbers that we just published for the last 15 months. I think fairly evidently the businesses are certainly performing. You know, the growth in all aspects was incredibly strong. Graham's already referenced the like-for-like growth, you know, circa 20% on each brand, you know, a little bit less in Escape, a little bit more in Boom, but circa 20% like-for-like growth, volume driven. You know, that's a great indication, I would suggest, of how well they were going last year. The operating margins are improving, certainly in Boom. Escape Hunt is already generating 42% EBITDA. It did that last year, it did that pretty much the year before. That is an incredibly strong place to play. So you could almost hardly expect to maintain that, to be fair. It's unheard of to be running at those kind of levels. But nonetheless, that's where that business is. Boom, being a lot younger, is still seeing quite significant growth in its operating margins. So we referenced in the period gone that GPs moved, and that's GP, I should say, including labour, so not kind of conventional sales minus cost of business, more accounting GP, so bring labour into that as well. But that moved from 52 to 59% year over year. So good improvements there. We're leveraging better sort of scale benefits, as you can imagine, through the property costs, a large portion of which are fixed. So sales growth, sales go up, property comes down in relative terms. Has some benefits on utilities as well. The net effect of which was to see EBITDA in aggregate for that business land at 17%, you know, up 4 points from the prior year. But it's important to note that within that 17%, you've still got a chunk of dilution. You've still got new sites which are coming on which lose money before they make money.
Yeah.
So you've got a dilutive effect there. We've talked previously about, you know, expecting to see EBITDA on a sort of a mid-term basis be, you know, somewhere kind of 20, 22, 25%, something in that ballpark. And I think if you can understand that you're at 17 on a young business being diluted by new sites, then very much we're on that onwards trajectory. Mm-hmm. So to then your second question around whether or not we are continuing to grow, I think the answer to that is yes. Like for likes, as you might imagine, have obviously come off quite a lot, if I'm honest. You cannot sustain and lap 20% like for like, particularly if you're not yet moving price. You know, remember, our like for likes are volume driven. That said, we are still seeing very good positive like for likes. We've talked previously about the fact that there were a couple of one-off events in August which really had quite a dilutive effect on us, particularly the riots. So the riots in August were very, very badly detrimental for both businesses, particularly for Boom. And so when we reported like-for-likes of circa 2% for the period to the middle of August, that had been heavily diluted by that sort of two-week period of, fairly out-of-control behaviours, where, of course, you're going to look to protect your teams, close your sites where you have to, customers aren't coming out. Yeah, I think the more positive place to look is, you know, we've got a 5% like-for-like expectation in the market at the moment, and we feel very, very comfortable that's an achievable number. We've seen the like-for-likes come back after that August lull,
yeah.
And you know, we're very confident that we'll be in strong growth.
course, reporting like for likes is a bit of a double-edged sword, really, because you do, but you know you've got to do it again.
Yeah.
How confident are you both are you going to achieve, maintain the like for likes?
Look, we're as we're sat here today, we're confident. As I say, we've seen the growth come back. So much of our business is, as you would imagine, pegged around the performance that we achieve in Q4. Christmas is obviously massive, and so a Christmas week, the strong Christmas weeks, particularly for Boom, will do 3x the run rate revenue that you would see throughout the year. So if you're able to achieve strong like-for-likes in those periods, the effect on the whole period is absolutely huge. And whilst early days, we're seeing very, very encouraging levels of corporate bookings already in for Christmas. We're seeing an increase in the capacity that we can offer. We're seeing a lot more confidence from our sales team now, who've gone through their first Christmas last year and the way they can better sell packages this year. So, you know, it's early days. We've still got a lot of training to do, but we're sounding pretty confident.
Graham. I'm going to pick on you now. Richard's talking about it this year. We've seen the business grow phenomenally, and the downside of that is your costs go up.
Yeah.
How are you managing those costs? What kind of effects are they having?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, we've seen significant inflationary pressure across the whole economy in the last couple of years.
For sure.
Where did we feel that most? Utility prices came through very, very strongly, as you know, back in 2023 in particular, we saw a very significant increase. I think as a business, we are quite lucky that, unlike a restaurant, actually energy bills are a relatively smaller proportion of our total cost base. So although we saw very significant increases, it was off a much smaller base. So it didn't have the devastating type effect that I think a lot of particularly restaurants and other sort of hospitality venues may have experienced. The other thing which, of course, came through was food price inflation. Again, food is only a small proportion of our overall mix. We do about 5% of our sales thereabouts in Boom are food related. So again, an impact on the cost of sale of food is relatively small. The impact on drink sales, although we saw some cost increase, we have longer term contracts, we have very good relationships with our suppliers, and where we did take a little bit of cost increase on that, we were able to moderate that. Of course, the other area we saw big increases was in labour. So labour, and particularly the minimum wage going up, the minimum living wage, and we pay more than that. We don't pay the basic minimum, but nevertheless, we want to maintain that premium. And of course, it feeds all the way through your labour levels, because your supervisor being paid a bit more than the people on the floor. And so when you put the people on the floor up, you've got to put the other ones up as well. So that had quite a big impact. We've actually absorbed all of those costs into the business. We haven't put through price, and we did that deliberately. The idea really was, we can see that there was a cost of living crisis going on. We want to maintain a strong value proposition. We see ourselves as sort of affordable premium. You want people to think that they're getting something special, but on the other hand, you also want them to see that they're getting value for money. And so we were quite careful at doing that, and particularly I think because we were a young business and we were seeing natural volume growth in the maturity of the sites, we were able to absorb those costs quite effectively. We've seen our labor ratio has actually come down as a percentage of sale rather than going up, notwithstanding the fact that we had a 10% increase in our labor costs. So that's just testament to the fact that, A, we were running a bit more efficiently, we could use fewer people in some instances, but more that we had the top line growth, which was more than compensating for that. So the idea of being able to absorb those costs was very much at the core of what we were trying to do. I think we've done it successfully. You've seen the margins in Escape Hunt maintained at 42%. You know, you don't want to be greedy. Although you put your prices up, we've got fantastic margins in there. We've been able to manage that through the labor costs. In Boom, where you've got the other costs as well, energy and so on, we've been able to absorb that. Coming into the current year, we've seen a further increase in labor costs, obviously 10%. We haven't put price up, but the corollary of that is energy costs have been coming down quite significantly. We've seen other areas of our costs we've been able to reduce as well, just through efficiencies. We've put in some new systems which give us greater visibility of what's happening on different sites. We're getting more consistency across the estate, which means better efficiency. So for the moment, we've been able to absorb all of those things. And I think that's been a very positive thing. Can we do it forever if there's continued cost increase? No, of course not. At some point, one has to push some price through. But we certainly have no short-term need to do that. And as long as we can maintain that, I think that's good for our customers.
ultimately, it's all about the customer. And if the customer likes where they are, they'll keep coming back.
Yep.
That's what you want to keep happy.
So forgive me, I'm going to stick on costs here, because that's quite a big thing at the moment. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of consumer pressure out there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of uncertainty. And in a few weeks' time, our new leader is going to announce the latest budget. Everyone's worried about that. Are you concerned about this? Are you bucking the trend at the moment, or are you going to...
I think you'd be daft. You'd be daft to be blind to it.
Of course, yeah.
So obviously, if we didn't think that there was a degree of elasticity there, obviously we would have put prices through.
Yeah.
By definition, we do think there is a lot of sensitivity, and therefore trying to be as well positioned as you can, it must make sense. There is clearly uncertainty. I suppose you could make some arguments that actually now that minimum wage has for the last sort of 2-3 years. Gone up quite significantly ahead of the now rate of inflation. How much of that does flow to a little bit more disposable income for consumers, particularly given that our core customer typically doesn't have kids, typically doesn't own a house. Some of the kind of the mortgage pressures, etc., might not be quite so exacerbated in our core customer set. But you know, we have to be cognizant of it. Nobody is immune to the cost pressures that are there in the environment at the moment.
I suppose, in one sense, though, with all this pressure, people are happy to go out and get some relief from all the worries that are out there.
Well, that's been a really, really interesting sort of facet of the feedback that we've had from so many of the customers that we speak to, and indeed that our teams speak to at a site level. That particularly with our kind of younger customers, our core demographic, mental health concern is absolutely at the forefront, and doing things that are for the betterment of your mental health trumps almost everything else.
Yeah.
So the comment that you get back again and again and again is that actually the things that we're not about to stop doing are going out and socialising with friends, because that's what makes us feel whole.
Of course.
So then our challenge becomes, well, how do we make sure that you're coming and doing that with us rather than with the many other competitor options that you have?
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, again, we go back to obsessing about trying to sit very much at the top of the consumer sort of feedback and customer feedback ratings, because that is the bit that, to a degree, you can control.
Yeah, I think it's interesting from my perspective as a business owner, where 10 years ago you said take everyone at Christmas time, take everyone to the pub and get drunk.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, let's go and do something like play a competitive, things like that. So how soon am I gonna have to start booking? Because you guys are gonna be flat
out.
It's
an interesting point, and I think there's probably two points there. What one around the fact that actually that traditional, if I might be so bold, slightly alpha thing about let's all just go to the pub and have a few beers is definitely being displaced. And, you know, we're incredibly proud of the fact our customer split is absolutely down the middle, male, female.
Yeah.
And I do think that it is a much more accessible place for a wider spectrum of customers. But in terms of, like, when do you need to book? I mean, we're delighted with how bookings are going already. And actually, every year, that seems to get brought forwards a little bit, particularly if you want to take 100 people. So now that we never had this problem, it's kind of a first world problem, but we never had that challenge in Escape Hunt, because you simply didn't have the capacity to take 100 person bookings. Whereas now that we do, we can take 100, 200, 300 people bookings. If that's what you want to do, you've got to book that up early, and that's what we're now starting to see land. So it feels like quite a nice place to be.
Okay, great. Moving forward then, looking at the next sort of 12 to 36 months, I know we spoke before about you've got this £10 million facility at Barclays. How are you going to utilise that, and what sort of growth are you looking at?
Well, so I'll tell you what we're not going to use it for. What we're not going to do is just draw the entire lot and go crazy buying sites. We're not about to do that. You know, we are very disciplined around the leverage that we want to put into the business, and we're pretty happy somewhere between 0 and 1 times on net debt. So you won't see us go crazy and massively accelerate the rollout, because we just don't think that's the right thing to do for the business. What you will see us do is nudge it. So organically, with the cash generation that we've talked about, we should be able to do 5 or 6 sites anyway. What the facility does for those sites is allows us to better smooth the timings of them. Actually, you don't have to wait for the cash to be generated, i.e. 2/3 of your cash flow over the Christmas period needs to be generated before you can be building. Well, we'd rather be building ahead of Christmas. So it gives us a facility to smooth for that. But it also allows us to nudge up, I imagine, to probably 10 sites, and obviously it self-perpetuates to a certain degree the more that you grow. So maybe if the 6 nudges up over time to 10 sites a year, that won't take us too deeply into the facility, but it gives us that smoothing factor. It's quite a material uplift in terms of what we have. And if you think about what that means for numbers, You're aware that we believe the runway for both businesses is significant. We believe that there's at least 50 escape hunts and at least 100 booms in the UK. So if you also believe that we can maintain our return on capital at something close to 50%, I mean, to be honest, even if it's 30%, but if you can maintain it where it is right now at 50%, and we're able to increase the amount of capital going into the business, let's say by a couple of million quid, 3 million quid a year because of the facility, well, in theory, that should flow through at an incremental £1.5 million over and above what we have done. Now, yes, it needs to get up to that point, and yes, the sites need to mature. But if you can imagine the compounding effects of that every year, adding another 2-3 million quid of EBITDA post a point, obviously you'll have some costs that need to sort of factor into that to dilute it a little bit, but it gives you an idea of what you can do fully funded.
Okay. I think in the UK, though, we've got, I mean, you were talking about expansion in the UK, we've got kind of an alcohol-driven sort of,
culture, isn't it?
I mean, you mentioned earlier about Dubai and places. How do you see this working internationally? I mean, would this work on the continent? Yeah. Would it work in France?
You've rightly pointed out, we did open a site for Boom in Dubai last year. That was, to an extent, it was slightly opportunistic. We have a very good team out there running our escape hunt business. It was previously a master franchise for the region, and during COVID, we had the opportunity to buy it back on extremely good terms, which we did. And actually, that, interestingly, I think that investment paid back in a matter of 2.5 months,
yeah, it did,
which was amazing. But we have got a very, very good guy and a good team out there. And as you can imagine, getting an alcohol license in Dubai is quite difficult. Unlike here, you don't just turn up at the local authority and apply. There are certain buildings which are allocated and have alcohol licenses. And one happened to come up in a fantastic location. And our general manager out there wants to expand the business. We saw the opportunity, and we thought it would be a very good test case to see how we could build a site outside the UK, how well the management from a cross-border perspective would work, and what the sort of learnings could be. That's gone. It started very well. It's been sort of up and down, and we're learning a lot about that business. And I think there is further opportunity in that region. But obviously, the Middle East as itself is not a big region for that sort of business. So the question rightly then is, well, can you take those learnings and what can you do in other parts of the world? The short answer is we think there is a huge opportunity internationally, but that's probably a bit further out in terms of our roadmap. Going back to what Richard said, within the UK, we can see 100 boom sites in the UK. That's going to keep us pretty busy. So I don't think we need to be rushing off onto the continent to try and conquer Europe or conquer the US. You can imagine this working incredibly well in the US. But again, I think you need quite deep pockets. We would need to be a bigger business. So I think certainly in the short term, our focus will be let's go for this opportunity in the UK. I think as you look down to the further second and third horizon, there's a tremendous opportunity for this concept, both Escape Hunt and Boom, but in particular Boom we're talking about here, to take that into Europe, to take that into the US and other parts of the world. But I think one step at a time.
Okay. Yeah. So that's fascinating. So if we were to get the sort of crystal ball out now, yeah, 4, 5 to 10 years, where would you see the business then? I mean, do you think it's going to be a bit of a slowdown in this area, or you know, what would your vision be?
Yeah, Richard, I think one thing I would say, I think you can look at that in two ways. There's one, I think there is this first question of, how do we see Escape Hunt and Boom? And then I think there is a broader question of how we play in the experiential leisure.
Yeah.
So perhaps you want to pick that up on.
Yeah, sure. So I suppose if you look at it in, as Graham said, in two ways, you've got Escape Hunt and Boom. So where do we see them as brands? Well, so we've been stunned by just the market reception to Escape Hunt. So one of the things that was levelled at us as a criticism when we first set up the business was that, well, these escape rooms, that must be a fad. That has to have 2 years in it, and it will be never anything other than that. And I think the first thing to start is we've just been so surprised at the extent to which the market has come to us far more aggressively, actually, than we thought it would. There is nothing at all in the data that is yet suggesting that this is not here to stay. And in the same way as bowling has become a staple of Easter holidays with families with kids, I think so are escape rooms becoming exactly that sort of same staple. So firstly, I'd say, 10 years down the line, do I think that industry is very much sort of there in and of itself? Absolutely, I do. You know, it is so well received by customers. The growth has been phenomenal. And we think there's a scale opportunity to grow it out, which actually should do nothing other than further bolster that sort of level of confidence. So I think the market opportunity absolutely exists. Do I imagine that we can get to our sort of 50 sites, certainly over a 10-year period? You absolutely want to believe that you could. I mean, that would only have us doing 5 escape hunts a year on average from where we are today. Mm-hmm. In terms of Boom, again, I see it evolving certainly as an offer. You made, I think, the exact right point, which is that forever and a day, alcohol has been the galvanizing force of social gathering and togetherness. So to bet against that as an industry, I think is a pretty punchy bet to place. You know, do we think that the games that we have today, you know, the axe throwing, the darts, the golf, are necessarily the same games as in 10 years' time? Well, no, probably they're not. You know, I'm sure a lot of them will be, in the same way as, you know, when we were all at university 25 years ago, the pool tables are always being played, the darts board's always in use. Or shock horror, our pool tables are always in play and the darts board's always in use. But, you know, does something else come along? Probably. But that's why it's designed to be modular. So I imagine you'll see some change out in game, but the fundamentals of what that business is doing, which is bringing people together for a high energy, you know, uplifting experience, I think that still sticks. You know, will we be at our 100 sites within 10 years? That's a little bit harder to get to necessarily, certainly not beyond the wit of man. You know, back to the numbers that we were just talking about, we're at 30 today, we've got to get to, you know, another 70 to get there. Spread it, 7 plus the 5, 12 sites. I was just talking about getting up to 10. It's not crazy to imagine that you could be there. The exam question for us will be how quick, you know, can we accelerate that a little bit? Not yet obvious at what point we can, but clearly, you know, the sort of the system, the structure, if you like, is there enough to be able to promote the idea that we could be at that stage and at that scale.
I think more broadly, though, if you see the trends in experiential leisure, i.e. people wanting to do stuff.
Absolutely.
There are very, very strong trends which I believe will support that growth. So, you know, the fact that even social media has had a big impact. People like sharing experiences. You used to walk around in a fancy shirt because that's what people saw you wearing. Now you can send a fancy video of the experience you had. You can share that with your colleagues, your friends, and so on. And I think that has actually made a big change in the way that people spend their time, spend their leisure. We've also seen, you know, the generational differences between drinking a bit less and doing a bit more. I don't think that's going to change massively. I think you're seeing a trend where people want to go out, they want to do things together, they want to be together. It's easy enough to sit in your apartment at home and watch TV or play games, but actually you also want to go out and spend time with people. And I think that trend continues. That opens up all sorts of other opportunities. We have a fantastic head office base, some very, very good people who are capable of doing a lot more than what we have today. So ultimately, does that mean someone comes and acquires us and we become part of a bigger leisure group? Quite possibly. Does it mean we add another leg to the business? Quite possibly. I think if you go ahead 10 years, all I can say is I can see Escape Hunt still being a very successful business. I can see Boom being a very successful business, i.e. games associated with fun nights out, drinking, food, etc. And I can see other experiential activities being tagged along the side of that, which also would be taking a bigger share of consumer wallet than they do today.
Well, you've already answered my next question, really, because one of the big fears I have is this just a fad? You know, I've read in one of your notes about competitive socialising. I thought, well, when I was growing up in Swansea, I would have thought competitive socialising meant something completely different. It was a certain element of accident. And then, you know, I remember talking to, I won't his name's name, but a fund manager who invested in your IPO quite heavily. And he was telling me all about escape hunt and things. And I remember thinking, okay, that sounds great for team bonding. Is that what you found, or has that grown then into more sort of a friendly kind of thing?
I mean, team bonding is still, or corporate per se, is still a, you know, a decent chunk of the escape hunt business. It's still, you know, kind of 10-12%. You know, something in that sort of ballpark. If you take it on the broadest of terms, as in corporate bookings specifically, and then groups of team mates coming to play after work. But ostensibly, it is more a consumer business. This is definitely, and our target customer is definitely consumer more than it is corporate for that business. But, you know, and I think that's where the real resonance has been. But why is it successful for team building? Well, it's successful for a whole bunch of reasons. As we said, it is very unlikely that you're going to, in an office with quite differing personalities, find somebody that really dislikes it. You know, if you go out and you try and organise go-karting, you can be pretty sure that's a polarising activity to do. And as are so many others, typically a little bit overly alpha and so on and so forth. That's just not the escape plan. But to be fair, it's not the Boom experience either. You know, in Boom, if you don't want to drink, well, you don't have to. the golf is there, you know, the darts are there, get yourself involved with the shuffleboard. So that's a very, very familiar sort of place to play that takes the pressure off that slightly alcohol-fueled environment that may have been a little more prevalent in yesteryear. So so for corporates, it's therefore both offerings are a pretty safe bet. You know, you're going to be pretty broad brush in terms of appeal. And as we just said, for consumer, well, that market's just coming absolutely in our favour. And, you know, we innately are competitive beings. Humans are innately competitive between each other. And you just see it, like, you know, group mentality, herd mentality. You watch it day in, day out. We go and sit on our sites and we watch it. You know, groups of, you know, very deferential individuals coming in, and then all of a sudden a couple of glasses of whatever, and you know, it's gone crazy around the shuffleboards. And that's what you want to see. It's that high energy, it's excitement, you get lost a little bit in the moment. So for me, competitive socializing, whether or not you like the moniker, is a very, very good place to be playing.
Okay, that's fascinating. Well, I suppose I've got one last question that everyone's going to want to know, and I kind of want to ask both of you. I'll start with you, Graham. 22-23 million pound market cap, your numbers speak for themselves. I don't want you to go into why do you think you're cheaper. Why would I, as an investor, buy shares in Escape Plan?
Look, I think there's a very strong investment case as to why you would want to own a business like XP Factory. Putting aside the share price, it's very cheap. Perhaps it's a great time to buy, but I'll leave that for you and your followers to make that decision. But if you just look at the dynamics of the business, first of all, we're in a growth industry. We've talked about a move much more towards competitive socializing, where people are spending their money, they are going out to do things. All of that is in our favor. So we're in a growth industry that starts there. We are growing within that growth industry. Look at the growth that we've actually delivered over the last couple of years. We've gone from 4.9 million of turnover 4 years ago to 60 million in the space of 4 years. We've really put the foot on the accelerator, and we are capturing a big share of that opportunity. And I think we're right at the front of that. Most importantly, our consumers love it. Look at the feedback we're getting from our consumers. We are top rated both in Escape Hunt and in Boom, higher than any of the other competitive socializing things on the platforms that we get, which is an aggregator, which gives us that information. So our customers love it. But then if you look at the financial profile of the business, what you're seeing today is a strongly cash generative business. We're generating the cash. We are being able to take that cash and reinvest in the growth. And by delivering 50% return on capital, the compounding effect of that should be very, very accretive to shareholder wealth. So I think there are lots of reasons why you would want to invest in XP Factory. I think, you know, there are some challenges on the AIM market at the moment. I think possibly that's why our share price has been held back a bit. But I'm hopeful that if we keep delivering on the numbers, we keep delivering on the outstanding customer experiences, that ultimately that will play its way out.
Okay. Richard?
I think that's such a comprehensive answer, it's quite difficult to add too much to it. But I suppose if I had to summarise some of what Graham said and possibly add a couple of things, I'd say start with exactly where Graham was. Customer-leading experiences that sit right at the top of the tree in terms of review. Market-leading box economics for both businesses, particularly Escape Hunt, the more mature business. The box economics there are extraordinary, and Boom trending very much to be a similar sort of star in the making. Return on capital is absolutely market leading at 50%. The free cash generation is, you know, it's a free cash yield of circa 20 to 25%. Like, you know, go find that somewhere else. You've got a rollout opportunity, which is substantial for both businesses, and you've got, with the facility, ostensibly no need to go back to the markets for equity. It's a fully funded growth place. So for me, those would be the reasons, combined exactly with what Graham said, that you're in exactly the right market that is hot. Those would be the reasons to invest.
Okay, well, I'm going to wrap up with one question. It's a little bit mean, but you've got two babies. Which do you love the most?
You're right, that's pretty mean.
Which is going to see more focus?
You know what? And I am obviously going to sit very much on the fence about the way I answer it, as I'm sure you would imagine.
Like any parent.
Like any parent does. And it definitely, as a parent.
Between us, no one else is going to know.
As a parent, it definitely differs by day. So what do I love? I'll answer it slightly differently. What do I love about Escape Hunt? I love that Escape Hunt has gone through the hard yards. I love that the resilience that the team had when it wasn't going well, when we were struggling to build, when we were struggling to find sites, when we were struggling to understand really how to resonate with the customer, the team that have gone through that have created this incredible resilience and now got to a business with, as I say, market-leading economics, market-leading customer review, and fantastic returns. So that has been just the most wonderful story to kind of be midway in the journey on, you know, kind of through that hard a bit. So we love it for those reasons, and we love the growth that can come. I think, you know, the excitement in Boom is where we are on the journey and where we think we can get to. We are just at the starting blocks now. We've built a load of sites. We're lucky enough to have some really good indicative economics starting to flow. But we haven't really kind of progressed very much further than that yet. We're not even quite halfway, you know, we're not even a third of the way through the race. We are now at the blocks. So the really exciting thing for us as a team, and a broader team by that, is where can we take it? How hard can we push this? Where can we find the additional bits of the experience? So you love it for that because it's exciting. You know, is it a bit of a headache at times? Because, of course, it's not got the benefit of as much consistency yet. Yeah, of course, that's a challenge. But that's also the thing that gets you entrepreneurially up and out of bed.
Have you thought about going into politics?
Oh my God.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, thank you so much for it's been fascinating talking about it.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.